This is Infidel One. Offending Coyote Down. Offending Coyote Down.
Roger that.
Welcome to Trappin' Radio. We're proud, organic, free-range, wild fur farmers of North America.
Let me tell you a little story about how I was raised. Every day work, every day pray. Got family, friends, yeah, everybody sins. A winner never quits, and a quitter never wins. Help folks in need, don't fall for greed. A jealous man is weak, so think before you speak. If you love them, let them know. If you hate, let it go. Fast can be fun, but sometimes you need slow. God is all good, the devil is so real. So listen up, y'all, cause this is how I feel.
I won't back up, I don't back down. I've been raised up to stand my ground. Take my job, but not my guns. Tax my check till I ain't got none. Except for the good Lord up above. I answer to no one.
Now let's cover our sponsors. They do a lot to help support Trappin' Radio. So I'm asking you guys out there and gals to help support our sponsors as they keep Trappin' Radio on the air. First sponsors, Oki Cable and Trap Supply. Jeb's the owner of this. He's out of Oklahoma. Super guy. You'll not meet anybody nicer. It's somebody you're going to want to deal with. You can reach him at oktrapsupply.com. You can give Jeb a call at 918-429-4648. Not only does he do trap supply guys, he's a fur buyer, so if you're around the Oklahoma or surrounding states, give him a call with your fur. When you need stuff, give him a call and he'll get it out to you as soon as he can. Our second sponsor is F&T Fur Harvesters Trading Post. Everything you need for trapping, hunting with hounds, and predator calling. Guys, if you're into trapping fur, hunting fur, chasing fur with dogs, you're not going to be able to think of hardly anything that you can't get from F&T. You can reach them at fntpost.com. You can also give them a call at 989-727-8727. Whatever you want, F&T's got it. Blue Ridge Outdoor Supplies. Scott Payne is the owner of this business. He's in Elkton, Virginia. He also has a lure line, Mountain Rebel Lures and Baits. He's got a great coyote trapping video. He's also a fur buyer in Virginia. Anything that you're looking for and your trapping needs, give Scott a call and he'll get it right out to you. Wildlife Control Supplies, proven solutions for wildlife control, delivering value, expertise, and products to the wildlife individual. If you're an ADC business, control business, even fur trapping, you need to look at these guys' website. Top-notch company, have everything you would want, even the odd stuff that ADC guys are looking for. You can reach them at wildlifecontrolsupplies.com. You can give them a call at 877-684-7262. International number is 860-844-0101. If you're a wildlife control professional, you need to have Wildlife Control Supplies as one of your favorites on your computer or your phone, because when you come across something that you need specialized equipment, Alan will get it right out to you. Now let's go trapping.
See, I'm a flag flying, Bible toting son of a gun. Yeah, I'm hell on the heart, just a rebel on the run. Scared, don't know it. Fear, don't feel it. The truth is the light. Sometimes you gotta fight. Good beats bad, right beats wrong. I'm a barroom preacher and this is my song. I'm climbing for the top, representing for the country. I'm the people's champ, right out to dig. Shotgun toter, Republican voter, Hank Jr. supporter, let's protect our border. To hell with anyone who don't believe in the USA, cause this is what I say.
I won't back up, I don't back down. I've been raised up to stand my ground. Take my job, but not my guns. Tax my check till I ain't got.
Well, everybody, this is Clint from Trapping Across America. I just want to remind everybody that Oki's running that special on his Duke Dog Proof Traps, $130 a dozen while supplies last. Now, we've got two guys here that I'm going to let y'all two introduce yourself. So, ladies first.
Go ahead, Greg.
My name is Greg Falk. I'm from South Central Illinois.
And you're just Greg Falk from South Central Illinois?
Yeah.
Okay.
Hi, I'm Jeff Hoffman. I'm from South Central Illinois. Good friends with Greg. Love to trap, hunt, and fish, and anything else that, you know, has to do with the outdoors, I really enjoy it.
So y'all are two exciting guys, I can tell. You're just Greg, and you just, okay.
Yeah.
Well, y'all, you started, because I think it's interesting, y'all two come down. Y'all are both Yankees, so I forgive you. But besides that point, you're like, you both like trapping, there's no doubt. You used to trap, mm-hmm. Jeff, a lot, and then you kind of got out of it, and you went to the dark side of the deer hunting TV stuff, and then you came back out to the light. So what got you into trapping to begin with? Why did you want to do it?
Well, when I was a kid, young kid, I can't explain it, and I'm sure a lot of other people that trap feel this way or felt this way. There was something about going to the hardware store or seeing a trap hanging up, or my grandpa had a, you know, whether he trapped or not, one of my grandpa on my mother's side, there was always a old trap hanging in the shed, and just kind of little bit, you know, intrigued by it. And then I can remember going out to the creek and setting, me and a cousin of mine, we set a trap. We caught a mouse. It was our first thing, and it wasn't in a mouse trap. It was in a, it was we had big visions of what we were going to catch and come out with a mouse. But
a mice and men, right?
Yeah, mice and men. And I read a lot of outdoor hunting or mountain man books when I was little, and kind of got me started. When I got up about 17 or 18, I had a good friend, Mike Cobble, and he had been shown how to fox and coyote trap. And actually, you know, we were living together then. He kind of showed me how to do it, and kind of struck a, you know, fire. Done it real hard for probably 4 years, and for whatever reason, I had, you know, just started a family, had kids. I had to start toning some things down. I really, really loved to bow hunt, and got away from it. And once I had thought about it, time, and, you know, again, I honestly, I didn't know trapping was so popular again. Mm-hmm. And I can remember, and I've told you this, I was elk hunting with my brother, and I was watching in Wyoming, a coyote up on a ridge. And something triggered something. When I come back, I started digging in and looking around, got another buddy, John, that was back home, was trapping, and Greg has never gave it up. And I come home and...
Well, you had a neat thing you said, I think it was a couple of days ago. You said when you started land trapping, you're having trouble with toe catches.
Yes.
And you were talking to Ray Milligan.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what did Ray Milligan do? Because I think that's pretty cool thing for him to do.
Honestly, and it was. He jumped us, took a lot of time and struggle. I had the belief, and, you know, we'd bought different kind of traps. As soon as that anything even barely touched that trap, it had to go off.
All new trappers believe that.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and Ray, and quite possibly could have got tired of talking to me on the phone, but he was you know, explaining how he set his traps up, and he said, "I'll tell you what, buddy, I'll just send you one of my traps." And he sent me a Northwoods number 2 that was adjusted with wasn't a night latch, but it was just had the dog filed off and pan tension. When I got that thing, I thought, there is no way. You couldn't even hardly force it up and down. And he told me, he said, "You just set it and then put a hammer or whatever." And sure enough, and once that happened, it just, things just turned. I mean, very seldom missed a coyote once it went that way. So, and I told you that, and I mean, honestly, that was a real good thing for him to do for a young guy. So,
I mean, that's pretty, you know, you saying that, though, I'm always amazed when I'm around newer trappers. They always have, and I've heard it from several guys, as soon as an animal touches it, I want it to fire. Or if it gets close, I want it to fire, and this, that, and the other. And then you show them what a true 3 or 4 pounds attention is, and they don't believe the trap can go off. They don't believe you can catch anything.
Exactly.
And even though you can't hardly push the pan down, you still catch possum.
Mm-hmm.
Even when you don't want to. So, now Greg, but look, back to you. You didn't have like a granddad or a dad or a mentor that just drug you out?
But it was in the hunting. My dad, he always had time to take me fishing, hunting, and my grandpa, hunting was a big thing in our family. The Thanksgiving, I'll never forget this as a little boy. You know, the men would go quail hunting, and you wasn't old enough to go. We had quail then, and they would be, you know, he always had time to take me out in the woods. And deer hunting, when I was more of a pain in the rear to him, I'm sure he would tag me along. And I, you know, back then we didn't know so much about tree stands, but he would, you know, take me and set me on this log or whatever. And I had that, but as far as trapping, no, I really.
But he just kind of set you up with this outdoorsman mindset, yes. And it just progressed into that.
Yeah, and we've, you know, even though we're from Illinois anymore, not always really proud of that, but it's small farm, you know.
Just because the president came from your state, you know, you got to own up to it.
Yeah, yeah. And our last two governors are in jail. that part's there, and very passionate about the outdoors. And my dad still had actually 3 knee replacements, 2, and then he had another one just this year. Went out and killed a turkey the other day. 2-3 weeks ago, he's in the hospital, you know, in intensive care. And there's always been a love for the outdoors that you can't. And the trapping just, I don't know, there's just something about setting, I can't explain it, set a trap.
Well, when trappers are listening to you, you don't have to explain it. It's kind of like those little surfer movies, you know, you just don't have to explain it. Everybody knows it. So how did you get in, Graham?
Probably from other kids in school trapping. I wasn't born into a trapping family by no means. But like Jeff, you know, I was brought up hunting and fishing and stuff like that. You know, Dad would always make sure we went out and did stuff like that with him. But what really turned me on to trapping, I would say probably other kids I was going to school with, and
so they'd come and brag about what they were catching, and
probably, you know, and I started trapping, and it just never did quit. I mean, it's always stuck with me, and I enjoy the solitude, I guess, you know, the feeling you get outside.
Now, from it's become clear to me. I mean, y'all both like trapping. But you really got an affinity for the fur side of stuff. That seems to be, I mean, you play a little bit, and you know, with it maybe commercially, but it seems like that turns you on.
Yeah, I mean, there's nothing better than, you know, after a good hard day of trapping, and then you put up your fur in the afternoon and evening, and when you're done, you can sit back and actually see I done that, and it's just a real self-satisfying part of it.
How did you learn how to do that?
Self-taught. I did befriend an old river rat in my early 20s, and I can tell stories forever on how I learned how to put up fur, but it was with a pocket knife, peeling the fat off a coon hide with a pocket knife.
He's not lying. He's told me this story.
And, you know,
that's hardcore, man.
Yeah, and that was within in an unheated building of any kind. And then I graduated up to a broken hoe blade, a garden hoe blade. That didn't work, so I draw a knife. That didn't work either, you know. and just reading. And
did you go to did you go to a lot and look at demos at conventions?
Or no, was that, no.
That's just later.
Getting my butt chewed out by the local fur buyer, taking over there. You know, I got
losing money always is a good motivator.
Yeah, you know, taking them over there and you know, you're proud of the peacock. You got your coon stretched out to 50 inches long, and they only weigh 15 pounds, you know. And they still got a half inch of fat on them. But you're proud, you know. And, you know, I'll give them credit. You know, they were nice about it and gave a lot of pointers. And
now, since you do like fur, are you a wood guy or a stretcher guy?
Wood. I prefer wood, yeah. I think it just makes a better looking pelt.
Do you think it makes you more money?
That's the question. I really don't know if it does or not, Clint. Wire is definitely faster, but I think it just looks more uniform.
See, I've always thought, at least because y'all have more hair on your stuff, so less hair. Flatter animals, it makes a huge difference for us because it gives the illusion that everything is thicker. Just because simple, like, mm-hmm. I mean, when I got started, I didn't really have the money to buy wood, so I would cut up old garden hoses I would find around and put it over and duct tape it, just to give it that fullness look. Mm-hmm. And it would, a lot of times it seemed like, especially like fox, it was a whole different fox just because in your hand it was thick.
Right. You know, a lot of people, when especially with wire, they start out using wire, and we tend to overstretch. With wood, it's a little bit hard to do that. Pull it down and tack it down and overstretch it.
Which, I mean, makes it thinner. So even if you get extra inches, you seem to lose a grade.
Oh, yeah. I definitely think it, you know, thins out the flanks and the belly on it and the back, you know, the inspection window. I think you'll lose. Losing the end, I think you're better off with a lesser grade and a fuller looking fur.
To his credit, he's taught a lot of us how to put up fur, and a lot of young kids. He's taken, you know, it's nothing to see a young kid in there, you know, doing his furs up.
And, now, y'all met each other in prison, right?
Yeah, we.
Sorta. Y'all think I'm joking, but in serious.
That is true.
We both grew up in prison.
Yeah, we both started working in the prison system in Illinois at a young, tender age.
Yeah, that's what they all say.
That'd have to take a whole other show to hear some of those stories, but yeah.
So is that how y'all met, though, was working?
Yeah, I was thinking, you asked that the other day, and I honestly remember my dad used to play fast pitch softball. There's another, Brownstown, where he's from and where I'm from, we're pretty, the towns, each town had a fast pitch softball team, and our dads all played. Well, him and his brothers came with one of the other kids I know, and the kids would always take off and go down to the next diamond. We'd have a pickup softball game. Mm-hmm. All I can remember is there was three brothers there, and oh my goodness, they were out of control. They get mad.
Is he one of the out of control?
He was one of them, and they'd be running around the bases, and they get mad at each other. Instead of they'd throw and try to drill the other one right in the back. And I'm 4 or 5 years younger than them, you know, and I was pretty intimidated by it. But I honestly remember that's how I think I first met him. But then we started in prison together, and he kind of took me under his wing. So.
So y'all just kind of like just talking, y'all both figured out y'all trapped.
Greg was always hard. He was trapping a long time, and I kind of went another way. But I don't know.
Well, I tell you, Jeff, you know, he talks about the coyote trapping, and I still struggle to this day. And hopefully, and I do believe Clint's going to help me a lot as far as the canine trapping. But years ago, I was really, really struggling with the canines, and I got a hold of Jeff, and he was light years ahead of me. on the canine trapping, and he still is today. But he really helped me a lot. Equipment and...
I think when I got out, I sold you all my good stuff.
Yeah,
good stuff.
I've still got it in its antique value now. It's tremendous.
And I don't. We talked, and of course we done some stuff together.
I mean, y'all have trapped together though.
Oh yeah.
When you had a broke neck and you had a broke foot.
Yeah, when I got back into it. 2 years ago or whatever, I started, you know, trapping, and of course we're good friends, and we always, you know, even he retired
and got out, however you want to say it.
Yeah, he got out of jail, and we just kind of, we set up a river line, went down, and, you know, we had a great time. I had a crippled foot I'd had operated on, and he had a surgically repaired neck, and...
Three times.
So we went on the river, and I don't know, we've always done something, you know, off and on together, and I couldn't go to work with a cast on, so I'd go hang out in his fur shed, and
I've actually seen a one-legged guy scrape a coon before. I can't say that. But Jeff credit, I mean, he won't quit. He'll keep going, you know, whatever it takes to get the job done. I kind of describe Jeff, there's a mountain up there, and he wants to run up and set a trap on top of it. And I'm at the speed that just kind of walk up and set the foothill.
It ain't quite like that. You know, he talks about coyote trapping, and I do love coyote trapping, and if I had to say, but honestly...
Why do you like it? Because up until the last couple of years, you didn't make no money on them.
No, and I didn't make... talk about making money on it, I can remember me and Mike, my buddy, you know, that when I was first trapping, we had... Back in, that was 84, 85, you know, he's getting $20 coons. We had two little Toyota trucks, and you can drive all day on $10 of gas. We had several coons, and we could have got quite a bit of money for them in the green, selling them before Christmas. We wanted a picture on a shed, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I think we took $20 coons and sold them for about $8 after Christmas just to get, you know,
the picture,
but I probably still wouldn't trade that in for anything. But the coyote trapping, there's nothing smarter than a coyote. And I know once I learned how to trap, and not that I'm still learning, but once I, you know, you talked about travel ways, and once you start putting that concept into your deer hunting and other things, anything, it just, a lot of things started happening. And
well, I mean, I'm not a big deer hunter. I'm a deer killer because I like the meat. Mm-hmm. So, but I mean, but don't you do deer the same way though? Isn't that,
yes,
what you're looking for, is to try the same,
if
same
the people,
concept?
Once you've, you can't tell me, show me a good trapper, especially a good land trapper, that if he wanted to be a good deer hunter, he ain't gonna be a good deer hunter, because you understand so much more about the animal, you know. And you know, like I said, though, I love coyote trapping, but water trapping, when I get into the water, and especially after, towards the end of the season, our land trapping goes out at the end of January. We still got till March 15th beaver, and we can catch otter now. And there's something about getting down and wading around the water, just refreshing. And Greg is light years ahead of me on the water trapping, so we're kind of pull off each other.
I totally get what you're saying. I've done so much predator work in the last 5 years. This is the first year in about five that I actually spent some time beaver, otter, coon trapping, and it's just fun.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's a totally different... you don't have to, in my opinion, you don't have to be as serious about it. And, you know, and it's more exploring, and it's more looking around and seeing what's going on, and it's, it doesn't seem to be the pressure.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah, I mean, getting your hip boots on and getting down in the creek and, you know, getting wet and muddy, and it's just you learn a lot more about your animal than road trapping and, you know, just hammering away the miles, and you just one set to the next. If you got to get down and walk, or even in a canoe or a boat, you see it slows you down. It does make it a lot more funner, I think.
I don't know if you noticed him, but you there in Alaska, he's kind of an explorer.
Oh yeah, I noticed that yesterday.
And you know,
why's the muddy water?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, we never did really figure out. Well, I did see some green.
See, I was in coyote mode. I really didn't care.
Yeah, and but he, you know, he'll preach, you know, you're gonna learn more if you'll get down and walk a creek like the old timers. Mm-hmm. And honestly, that's deer hunting, trapping, everything that the kids starting out, they need to have some fun and explore and not worry so much about the numbers and the, you know, mm-hmm. take your picture and do all that, but when the exploring part, I mean, with all, you know, with all the information out now, and thanks to guys like you, kids can start catching stuff a lot quicker.
And I do think what you're saying, I mean, because you're saying you're seeing it in the deer side. Mm-hmm. But when you were doing that, everybody was worried about, you know, not that I had a good time or the story about mm-hmm. the hunt or the friends or the campfire or mm-hmm. crazy stuff that goes on. How big was it? It wasn't big enough, you know. And that's
sure.
the only thing. And I think that really hurts young trappers. I think, like I was saying when I was over at the lure shed, I think Facebook is one of the things that really kicked trapping back off for younger people. But at the same time, you can get so wrapped up in just having a picture, you forget why you're out there.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Yeah, I mean, it's the instant recognition age. I mean, everybody wants to make a YouTube video of anything about them. But I think, yeah, we are caught up, way too much caught up in numbers. Instead of burning a tank of gas every day and you know, and catching a higher number of animals, you might be better off parking your truck here at the bridge and walking down the creek, you know, slowing down and keeping your overhead expense mm-hmm. lower. Because I like to concentrate on the financial end of it too. You know, I want to have a good time, but I want to keep my expenses down and you know, make more money.
Because like we were talking yesterday, and you can stop me if you don't want me to go any further when I start. If somebody like you caught 104 coyotes, and somebody else caught 140 coyotes, and they did it with twice the amount of expense because they covered more ground, who really won and who really lost? That's how you look at it.
Yeah, but you also got to look at what's exactly. But you got to look at it's what the person wants out of it, though. Mm-hmm. And you know, myself, I spent last year a lot of money.
I appreciate that.
Yeah, yeah. I spent a lot of money. There's a lot of you that appreciate that, but I spent a lot of money on gas. I started out with the you know, you start out with one concept, and I'm guilty. I'm a very competitive person, but I'm more competitive.
No.
Yeah, I'm more competitive inside myself than anybody else. It ain't so much a struggle with others as it's a struggle within myself. I push myself, and my wife's like, "What, you know, what's you're becoming consumed with it?" Well, yeah, but when I force myself to get up at 3 o'clock in the morning before work, and once you get past that initial, man, I don't want to get out of bed, and you get out there and you get that cold breeze in your face, and you know why you're out there. And I really struggle inside p- pushing myself, and I admire these young kids of Brandon, and they know now what most of us know at pushing 50.
What did you say, broke down?
Broke down and surgically repaired. And that kid, you know, a kid like that has got the best years of his life with a lot of information, thanks to guys like you and different ones that are willing to share. When I started and Greg started, worse for Greg than me, you know, Ray Milligan was a big help. I didn't take instruction, you know. My buddy Mike showed me. Somebody showed him. But we were still, the information that you can get now is, you know, beyond me. And that's good, because even though the selfish side of a person wants it all to theirself, the people like you and different ones that have been willing to share makes it so trapping 20 years from now, when we're old and gone, there's going to be young kids picking it up. And I sure hope they're still, you know, I don't think there's any choice but to share it now. That's, you know, I mean,
that's a good way. Yeah, I mean, that's just the way the world's changed.
And but, you know, if it, there's a stage in trapping, if everybody would have just held on selfishly and never, you know, back in, but you're looking at, in the Depression, a mink, you catch one mink and you were rich.
It's a month's salary.
Yeah, a month's salary. Where, so you're going to hold on to that. But my own personal thought is you know, when I got back in, 2 years ago or whatever, I had no idea who Clint Locklear was. I had, you know, I'm was raised up not on the computers, didn't take typing in high school, so I'm kind of a computer dummy. But, you know, our buddy John, he was getting in. He's only trapped 3 years, and he caught 140-some coyotes. And very, very good land trapper. It's the information you can draw now is totally
mind-blowing. Well, the information out there, you know, and there's always still a learning curve. Just because you know how to do something, be able to do something, is two different things. But if the person has got the drive to do it now, there's no excuse. I mean, I can imagine how frustrated it must have been when you started, Greg, and you're just like, okay, how do we catch something? Well, now you got 10,000 ways to catch something.
Yeah.
And better equipment.
You know, I just knew from listening that you bought a number one long spring Victor. I don't know, I may have had three at one time. And it took wire and a stake. Okay. Well, I grew up in a construction family. And from the houses my dad would build, there would always be leftover copper wire. And a stake, a trap, and now I have wire. Well, as you can imagine, if I did happen to get a hold of a coon, how long he stayed in there with copper wire? Not very long. So it wasn't long before I lost some of my traps, but I evolved from that.
But I mean, but today though, there's no excuse for someone not to know that, not to do that.
Exactly. And you know, it's got a but, and I know you've said this and been beating a dead horse with all the information out there. One thing that, you know, took off of your instruction, it's amazing how, especially yesterday, setting your beaver, your beaver control job there. If you hadn't been monkeying with us, you were in and out of there, and possibly, you know, five dead beaver, and it took you 5 minutes of work.
That's just because they were 100 yards apart.
100 yards apart, exactly. And, you know, and the one thing, man, simplicity, you got a lot of information out there, but if you slow it back down and simplify it, and that's what it seems to me like, there's a common denominator. All you real good guys that are great trappers, you all got one thing in common. That's just, you got a system that's simple.
Well, I mean,
the KISS method.
When all the business stuff I've read, one of the most amazing models that's ever been produced in America is McDonald's. And what McDonald's did is he has a hamburger, whether you like them or not, because at our age we get where we don't like them, but at younger we thought that was manna from heaven, eating at McDonald's, you know.
Yeah.
But they took a product and a system and made it where literally you could train a chimpanzee to cook hamburgers and french fries at McDonald's. If you've ever been in one, the button tells you where to put it down, a button tells you where to take it up. You know, everything's timed, everything is this, and you don't have to know anything about meat or hamburgers or nothing, and you can cook the same hamburger in Dunlap, Tennessee as you can in Illinois with two different chimpanzees that's never seen each other. And that model has worked so good. And so to me, if you can get trapping down that way, you know, and it's getting crazy on how simple stuff, like y'all playing with the portable pockets, you're just like going, there's no way.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, when you saw the beaver stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, a monkey, if I could teach a monkey what a beaver slide was, I could teach a monkey to catch those beaver with that system.
And quick.
And quick.
Yeah. Yeah, there's no, that was what was amazing to me. It's even though you learn more, it's like, sometimes you already know it, but you're,
so you try to complicate it.
You try to complicate it, exactly. And
I was making a joke on those pipes. It's like, you know, we need to come up with something like, you know, these have been, you know, they can only use them if they're forged in Mordor, you know, mm-hmm. and you can only use them on the high moon, and you got to temper them in beaver oil, and, you know, it would be easier to sell them that way. I mean, it really mm-hmm. would. It's a piece of pipe and a rod.
Exactly.
So what y'all, you're the two guinea pigs on a project I'm doing where I'm taking, there's going to be other stuff that I'm going to do without y'all here, but doing an online training course for catching coyotes. So what are some things that stuck out?
The small travel ways and foot placement for the set, whether it's your pipe set, I mean, you can incorporate it in a flat set to a dirt hole. That really, really has stuck out for me.
So where do I put the trap in a set?
In the brush. Which I am totally not used to.
It depends on whether or not you're, what I took out of this, other than your ground up here is hard.
Mm-hmm.
For the record, you probably see at the DT-45, you need a dynamite and some, I mean, but the one thing that it stuck out probably more to me talking to you, changed my thought process, was I was trying to catch the coyote and you're trying to not miss the coyote.
Mm-hmm.
Is that fair? To, and, you know, that the one set, you let me set it. Oh, yeah, it's going to catch a coyote. But if I, you know, just took what was there, moved my set 2 foot to the left, now I've totally taken the same set and cut down his approach and not really crowded him either. I mean, mm-hmm. That's you know, because it would go right through me, but until you actually see it time and time again, and then you think back on, okay, what I do here, you notice I kept trying to keep everything out in the open, and I think
to me it's a control issue. When you go out in the open, it's more of a hit and miss type thing.
Mm-hmm.
and you know, we made fun of fox trappers pretty hard the first day,
mm-hmm.
but it's always the control thing. And the more camera work that I did, the more that became obvious. And so if you can't control them out there, don't let them go out there, you know, or don't let them work something out there. And that's just a system that works. But you can see now, if someone asks me at a convention, where do you place your trap at a trap set? Hey. I just go, ooh.
Yeah. Because if you go with a standard, if you want to tell somebody, okay, 10 and 2 or 8 and 4 or whatever.
I mean, yeah, we were like 3 feet on some. Yeah, they were to the side, to the back, to the front, to the everything, because it's how a coyote's gonna, you know, you don't worry about the trap sets, you worry about the animal.
I come down here with the I don't know what the word I'm trying to say, but with the
mindset
that Clint was gonna have, I was gonna have to go buy 10 more dozen traps, and I'm gonna have traps set all on different areas, and I still am gonna use double sets, more some double traps at one set. But you, right off the bat on your, you know, I try to say, well, I ain't a fox, and Greg always makes fun of himself. I know I'm a fox trapper, I'm, you know, and I try to think, well, no, I'm a coyote trapper, but when you set the set, then it started making sense. What? That trap's 2 foot back. But when you took with what was on the ground, what was there in front of you, and you think about it, it was the only place to put it. And you pointed
without
out,
forcing something.
Yes, without forcing the issue. And my mindset is I'm trying to go out there and yeah, you can go. And a lot of guys have a lot of luck with that. You know, you pointed Randy and different ones, go in and cover lots of ground and just, you know, one set kind of set. And there's, I mean, you can't argue with success. But if you're out there, limited number of traps, limited number of time, limited number of acres you get to trap, you take what's there, not force a set. You can make a set anywhere. But if you'll look around for, and I still struggle, and I know Greg's talked about it, we struggle. You put us on the spot the first time, where are you going to put a set here? And it's like, duh, you know. I'm kicking the tire, and not, you know, because I don't want to do something wrong. And honestly, it's like right there in front of you when you said, you know, right here.
So it made you nervous when I made
you. You made me very nervous. Yeah. I mean, you's like,
I do that to everybody. And it's not, and I've tried all different ways not to make somebody nervous.
But it's better. I mean, I think you're trying to get in our head. You want to see what we're thinking, and there's no better way than to. Yeah, we won't talk about the little stick.
Could you imagine if I showed you some of my sets, and then what you would have done is try to incorporate half your set and half my set on the wing, and then neither one of us would know what was going on.
You pointed something out on your flat set when you used what was already there, was going to have rain, and I'm sure when you get to the video of it, you moved it back. First of all, you know, I still think, well, I'm moving it back too, but I wasn't moving it back, and you've got 4 feet going over. He's probably going to hang up where you wanted to set the trap anyway. And if he goes ahead and decides to work it coming in and out, he's, you know, and you're not building a barricade, you're using what is there. And that's probably going to help me more than anything.
So when you're at home and you start looking around, you because what's going to happen is, from talking to people, is they go home and they try to emulate that. Some of the time it's going to work, some of the time it's going to not, and you'll just have to kind of figure that out in your own head. Because I can't tell you what I see in my head about how a coyote's going to work a set, and you're going to have to work that out on yourself. But eventually you will. And with your snow, you know, that's a huge learning tool. I mean, that really is a huge learning tool.
The humbling tool.
Well,
You think you got every coyote caught in the area until, because you don't see tracks at home unless it's rained and muddy or whatever, and we're, you know, a lot of fields and waterways, and you think you got every coyote caught, and the first 2 inches of snow that comes, you got coyote tracks, and more than one coyote all over, you know, hanging out there,
doing the waltz around your set.
Exactly.
Yeah, I've even had seen where they built a fire right there.
So what stuck out in your mind? What was,
like I say, getting closer to the brush, and
that's the biggest thing. It really,
yeah, I mean, it really had that really, and like I say, looking for them travel ways within a travel way, you know, where he's going to step to, you know, to get to the to the set, where he's going to put his foot to step on that trap. That really stuck out in my mind. And how much more that coyotes do hug the edges, you know, in close. That really, really something I've really picked up on, and that opened my eyes a lot.
Well, the biggest thing about using that is, you know, one of the three rules we talked about is you got to learn to be a lazy trapper. If not, mm-hmm. you just work yourself to death. Mm-hmm. And if you use the ground instead of fight the ground, it just works out better, and you have less energy involved.
Mm-hmm. Not like walking to the 100 yards to the Jeep, huh?
Yeah. Well, I'm not going to, you know, bust you on everything.
Yeah.
But, we had a good time, I thought.
Oh, you know, yeah. It was a great time.
Yeah, I wouldn't have traded this for the world. I mean, it's been a real pleasure, Clint.
So what was your opinion, like, on the portable pockets? I mean, it was different than what you thought I was going to be doing with
them. Sure.
Well, what stuck out? What about that was?
Well, first of all, you know,
because when y'all started setting them, there was only one other set that was made without the pipe after that point.
Yeah. If I had to, my thing, I mean, I had a misconception. First of all, I knew you didn't think you would be talking about them if they didn't work. You even said you set on these for LT grade. 10 years or however many.
Probably about six.
6 years. And then I had it in my head that you were going to always put the portable pocket right on the ground, in the ground.
Which we did some.
Did some. Mm-hmm. But also there's a certain areas that, you know, you leave it up and it's got to take your lure, and you're going to be covering with your bait and lure, you're going to be covering a lot more area on the wind currents, and the fact that you can't see them. And, you know, what little I do know about a coyote, when you start putting things out there that they can see, it ain't always what you want it to be.
Mm-hmm.
So you hit them. Getting back to what Greg was saying, you open my eyes on, you know, just something as simple as the cedar bush. Mm-hmm. You're putting the set back in a cedar bush. Coyote ain't afraid of a cedar bush. They see them down here. They see them all day long.
Mm-hmm. And that's where their food's at.
Yeah. So you think he's afraid there's a rabbit under a cedar bush? No, he's going to go in there. So he's, you know, in my mind, I'm thinking, you seen me. I'm trying to be out, you know, where he's got plenty of room to move, and you told us that through your night vision footage that every time a coyote got a scent or anything on a road, first thing they done is get off the road.
Mm-hmm. Every single time.
And that stuck out. You know, them little things like that, when you say that stuff sticks out in my mind. It's like, okay, if they're doing that, then they're not afraid to work up into the brush a little bit. So.
But Clint, you know, what I like about the pipe set, if they work, as you say.
We had one check on them.
the ease. You have your lure holder. You have your anchor point. It's all one system.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's a lot easier than you know, dragging around a lot of different other equipment. Ease of pulling. It's, you know, I admit.
You were worried about that, too.
Yeah, I am a cheapskate. I still dig up a lot of my earth anchors. You know, I mean, these here come out with not very much force at all. And that's,
well,
you know, it's less tiring.
Well, I got tickled because I could tell that you were, you don't believe nothing until you see it.
Yeah.
So that's when I stuck you on the end of that chain and I told you to pull that out of the ground, mm-hmm. you know, grown man,
mm-hmm.
and you couldn't do it. Because the leverage is different
mm-hmm.
than it is on anything else.
You've talked on previous shows about systems and stuff, and that's the thing about this is it's the versatility of it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm not going to go home and have every one of them use them as a coyote set. I mean, you got that's a system. Mm-hmm. You drive along the creek, you know, stop on a ditch, you got a lot of coon sign. And if, as long as you got a coon trap with a little piece of chain on it, you can have a set made in 30 seconds. I mean, honestly.
Especially coon, yeah.
Coons, yeah. Ooh. Coons. If you run into beaver, you know, you don't have to. There's so much you can do with them. If you want to use them on the top end of a drowning rod, if you want to just long chain, you got so many things. And you know, I'll probably more, you know, I'd like, I'm kind of leaning over into the drags. You know, you've got guy I've seen, didn't see very many traps. Yours didn't have a drag on them. And I mean,
except for the traps, I've got a certain amount of traps that are singles that if I want to run double traps, I can hook into the drag chain. But except for the ones that I built just for the portable pockets with a 4 foot of chain or 4.5 foot of chain, yeah, everything's got drags.
And you can take that system, though. I mean, I'm going to go home and have to buy a truckload of chain, but I'm going to have, you know, after talking to you, have it where my traps, I can get the chain, longer chain to them easy if I want to use the drag in it. If you got a drag on a trap, all you got to do is stick that down. If you want to hang him up there, don't have anything to do it, stick it down right through the drag.
Well, that, I mean, when it, if you, you know, everybody wants to, and we talked about this, everybody wants to have, especially in books. I mean, you know, you hear a demo and the guy gets up there and goes, you know, you need to have the same kind of trap and the same type system and this, that, and the other. Well, as you learned up on that mountain, long springs were a lot more difficult to put in that dirt. I mean, even to put blocking sticks in, we had to mock that on one of those because you couldn't physically put a stick in the ground.
You need welding rods.
Yeah, so that's a place where coal spring, even though I love the big pans and all the advantages that gives you, that's where coal spring is really, really handy. Or you're doing a flat set, or you're doing mafia sets or something like that. So even though in a lot of areas that long spring with a big pan is the ticket, you get in places like that, if you'd work yourself to death in all that chert up there if you just had that. So just having one trap and one system, it doesn't work. And I wouldn't want you to go back to Illinois and use all pockets because they're going to eventually get habituated to them. You still need to do your flat sets and your dirt holes. It's just another tool. But the difference between that system is, it's the same system you can use to catch everything, I'm pretty sure, from a wolf to a muskrat. Because I've caught muskrat. I hadn't caught a mink. We caught gray fox, red fox, coyotes, bobcats, coon. Everything that I went after with them, it's been really simple. And it's the same equipment.
The one thing that, you know, kind of, in some ways, it's hard for me. And me and Greg's talked about it back at the hotel at night is, you're giving a lot of stuff that's making people use less of your lure, even. I mean, you know, if you wanted to sit there and say, I mean, honestly, a pocket's going to take, a portable pocket and a coon lure or coyote lure or beaver, delta red, whatever, there's no need to re-lure that for several. I mean, you're going to catch whatever's in there before you need to re-lure it. I'm sorry. It's you talk about after the rains, the big rainstorm. It's in your book. It's in when you take that system, you're going to, you know, even though I don't have all, but if I've got a lot of dirt holes and it rains 3 inches at home, I've got problems. But if you've got dirt hole and a pocket and, you know,
if you ran half, you at least have half a line.
You got a half a line working to catch the biggest, you know, you've said it didn't dawn on me. Everybody tends to think, well, right before this storm, but your deer and everything move the best the day after when that bluebird, you know, everything clears off that right after the storm goes through on the back side of the front, stuff goes crazy.
But everybody's out of commission with traps.
Everybody is out of commission. One thing that stuck out to me on the coon, using for the coon, is your water level goes up. You ain't digging it. I mean, you just move it up. It's fast. There's no, you know.
It's a McDonald's system. For
exactly. Yeah, I mean, you know, two broken down jailbreakers like me and Greg. We, you know, it's easy. And not just easy, it's just so fast and simple. And I can't, I mean, not, it, and that's what I took out of your instruction. Man, I get out there and fiddle around with a beaver set, and you looked up at me after, you know, well, so is this how you done it? Heck no, it ain't how I done it. I kicked around and, you know, you set a snare on a crossover. And you talked about a lot of things, like, okay, take a snares, use them, and yeah, you're gonna take a little damage on your fur, but you're gonna pile up your boat so much with less weight and less that you're gonna make it up down the, you know, down the road anyway.
So, well, I mean, that just makes common sense, but people don't believe in the cost analysis on stuff enough. If you catch 100 coons in footholes and you've got the extra time in putting that in, or DPs or whatever, and you put that in, you have no fur damage. And you went and you say you go to a state where you're allowed to raccoon snare out of a boat, and with those fiberglass kill poles, you could literally, if we had the coon here, I could do it here, but I can't imagine what it'd be like in a state that actually had coon. And you could go out and probably easily put 100 of them in a day. I mean, you saw we put five in and had to walk 100 yards in 3 or 4 minutes.
And we were filming it and everything, and it was still
getting caught up in blackberry bushes.
Yeah. And
so, but if you got 200 or 300 of them out, your energy levels would be about the same. So if you, instead of catching 100, you catch 200 and you lose 20%, well, you're still 80% ahead of you with the perfect fur.
Exactly. That's I mean, you're and but even when you were showing the coyote instruction, beaver, whatever, it always seemed like, you know, I'm wondering, because I'm not gonna lie to you, I struggled last year and I thought I had everything, you know, planned out, but you go in and pound in 30 sets, that's where that pocket, you know, that's gonna up your, you know, up your numbers and ground you're covering, because your speed, and you're not going to do every one of them, but moving along with that. And then there's other different things, you know, that's going through my mind. Okay, go off of that concept and just keep getting faster, you know, more efficient. Because you can run and jog to them sets or whatever. I can. I'm still not going to get them in as fast as you. You know, you just go up there, bing, bang, boom, and out of there you're gone.
Hey, I'm fat. I got to do stuff like that. So today we're going to go over, we're going to get in the water, we're going to do beaver, otter, raccoons, muskrats, and different things like that. Now, you were saying that you were thinking about floating some rivers, and I've got the shorter, the kayak over the canoe over here, and I was saying, if you're going to really get into the river long distance type stuff, you need to me that you can never beat a 17 foot wide aluminum canoe. I mean, because what happens on these shorter things, they're great for, like, if I was doing a beaver control job, I could have dumped that off in there and went all through that swamp yesterday with no effort whatsoever. Because the thing didn't weigh like 50 pounds. But the aluminum canoe, when I used to run these rivers down here for beaver control, you know, I'm in it all day long. Well, so you start throwing 10 beaver and the conibears and the foothold traps and sliding rods, and you start running out of room, and I mean, all this stuff you have to take into consideration. Most of it you don't think about till you're knee deep in a situation somewhere and you realize you got a piece of equipment that.
Also, if you dump it, you've got several $100 worth of traps. I've done that once. I mean, me and Mike.
I guarantee the Squatchy River, one day there's going to be an archaeologist that's going to, especially on one stretch where the Indian traps are. He's going to find a ton of traps. Because steel does not float. So anything else y'all can think of as far as?
Well, I tell you what, when you get
And this ain't a brag about me, but no. I mean, it's just something y'all saw that might help somebody.
Yeah, I think Clint shared with us what he knows, and he shared with other people. And I do urge us guys that's probably a little older, you know, bring up these younger guys and help them out. You know, even if you've got to give them a little bit of equipment, you know, let them help you out in the first shed. I tell you what I tell some of the younger guys up my way, if I can see they're really interested in doing this, and it may take a couple years of hanging around once in a while, I said, all right, I'll show you this, which I don't know hell of a lot, but you have to pass it on. Sometime in your life, you have to pass it on to somebody else. So I kind of stressed that. I said, I'm going to do this for you, but you have to pass it on. You can't keep it to yourself. Well, that, you know, and you've passed on a lot of your knowledge to us, and I appreciate it.
Well, I can't imagine what it must have been like back in the day. You get someone wants to trap. They can't figure out how to trap.
Yeah.
And then just the frustration level of going out and, I mean, the first animal I ever caught was from a video. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, that was sitting there. And then you want people to stay in trapping. If you don't give them the information for them to be successful, they're going to get frustrated and go somewhere else. Sure.
As bad as we hate to admit it, and, you know, everybody's got, I can't believe not everybody's got a little bit of a selfish streak or a little bit of a, that's human nature. But this day and age, it's about numbers, and I'm sorry, we can't compete with the liberals and the city people. There's not enough of us, and unless we can keep these young kids, keep the numbers up, and it's got to be more than about money and more about recognition. I mean, we got to show them the fun side of it. We'll all be dead and gone, and you know, we're thankful, and I'm sure you guys pass stuff on to you. But there was a day when them guys that were passing that stuff on to you, they had to sneak and peek over the creek at an old man, you know, and
hopefully they were observing it correctly.
Yes. It's been very. I've had a great time. I don't know. I mean, you don't give yourself enough credit about giving other guys, Greg. You had a father and son come in, and I know he basically gave away some traps that, you know, to get them out there, trap them, period. I don't care. You can say, well, I got this or got that, but he set them up. And I'm like,
well, how I look at it, I'm happy to do it, and they're happy to get it, and you know, I think that's a good deal, you know.
Well, it is all the way around, and it's you would if you were in their situation, it would be, you know, and that's the way you ought to do everything in your life anyway. I mean, just people are better that way.
Exactly.
Yeah, I've never seen a Brinks truck fall in a Hearst yet. I have seen a lot of Hearst, but I haven't seen that combination. So share what you have.
Yeah. Well, now Greg, you've been entertaining, because we'll be going down the road, and where we were going is about an hour and a half from where we're staying. And yesterday, we're just going down the road, and he goes, you know, if anybody wants some coffee, I'll buy. I'm just putting it out there.
Got to finish that whole story. He gets out of the truck, and I go help him carry the coffee back, and he hadn't got his billfold.
That was an honest mistake, somewhat.
Yeah.
Well, I guess we can go put our hip boots on and go play with some otter and beaver.
That's what I'm looking forward to.
All right, guys. Thanks. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Clint.